Okay, as the title suggests, I'm going to talk about how to basically automize one loop calculations. And if you look at the field of one loop calculations and compare it, for instance, with leading order calculations status 15 or 20 years ago, they pretty much look the same. Leading order calculations 15 years ago, basically we knew how to calculate a leading order diagram. You just write on the Feynman diagrams and you fill in polarization vectors and momenta. So in principle you can calculate, for instance, something like PP bar to W plus 4 jets. And if you start doing that, you run into problems, and the problems are simply algebraic problems, just the overwhelming number of terms. So at leading order, this was solved by taking this in principle method, which was purely analytical. You had to write down the Feynman diagrams and all substitute it, and turn that in principle method to a practical algorithm, which you then subsequently can program on a computer, and that will solve the whole problem. So basically the computer is used to solve the algebraic part of the calculation. Now if you now look at the one loop calculations nowadays, there is in fact a method which in principle solves any one loop calculation. And the only thing which holds you back is if you actually start to use it, you again are confronted with an enormous amount of terms. So it's again an algebraic problem. So here you want basically to copy what you did for leading order and let the computer do the whole algebraic part of the calculation. Now we took a first step on this path, and it will be a very long path. The first step is in this preprint, which I wrote with the chair here. And of course, proposing a method is useless if you don't do anything with it. So we immediately embarked on implementing this algorithm. And I do that together with Julia Zanrighi and again with the chair. So what I will talk about first is the goal and the status where we are at the moment. And then I'll talk about how to get from diagrams to scale integrals. Actually, our method does not address this issue. What we actually address is the second point. Once I'm at scale integrals, how do I go from scale integrals to basically a basis set of integrals? Or in other words, how do I evaluate this part numerically? And I don't have to worry about it. And once you're there, then you can go back to this step. And for this step is a thing we like, because this looks pretty much like a leading order. And there's a whole arsenal of methods in the literature which discusses how you could organize diagrams into more and better structures, such that you can reduce the algebraic complexity of the answer, and that you can again implement in an algorithm. But this is the first step, and this is addressed in this preprint. Okay, so I already told you that the purpose of this is a numerical evaluation of one-loop matrix elements for standard model processes. And the only limiting factor we want to have on how many external particles we can handle is computer power. What we are not going to do, with Zoltan, Nash already discussed, you can do an alternative method, is just do the loop integrals purely numerical. This is certainly an approach you should try to pursue and see how far you can push that method. We will take a different approach and try to implement this analytical method for doing a more analytical method for doing the one loop integrals. So what we are going to do is a numeric reduction of the integrals to a basis set of known integrals. There's also another group working on this and having similar ideas about this. Okay, so where are we now? We finished this basic algorithmic description for the numerical implementation. It should work for any internal and external mass configuration. That doesn't really matter for a numerical program. And what it actually, what we do is we calculate the finite part of the tensor interval numerically, and the divergent part is isolated, and you can calculate that analytical. So here's a standard problem you'll have. You have some rank m endpoint function, which will appear in your Feynman diagrams. Now we have started on implementing this algorithm for up to 6 legs at the moment, and it will become clear why 6 and not n at the moment. And we have coded up the algorithm now to flush out all kinds of subtleties in these sort of methods. We are starting to work on explicit examples. And the first thing you always want to do is something very simple. It's 2 photons to 2 photons. There are no infrared divergences, so you don't have to worry about that. And the answer, there are 2 trivial Lisley amplitudes, which 3 pluses and 4 pluses, they are just -4 in this normalization. And the recursive algorithm produces the -4 also. Here you can see the analytic answer is for the non-trivial Lisley amplitude. It's slightly more complicated. The logs, things like that. And you can see that this algorithm, which is actually recursive, produces basically the same answer up to an overall phase factor, which has to do with how you define helicities. And you can see there's basically no loss in accuracy at least for this simple example. Now that we succeeded here, we have to go to more complicated examples. Now, because this is a recursive algorithm, if you do 2 to 2, you basically do 2 to 6 also, because it runs through exactly the same code. So at the moment, we are busy in trying to make this work, which is still a somewhat, at least from algebraic standpoint of view, still a somewhat simple example, because there are only 60 Feynman diagrams for this one. Now, once we succeed there, then we're pretty sure that the algorithm is stable and that it is correct. Now, of course, this does not, to make a real algorithm, you have to show that you can do really more complicated problems. And the most complicated problem you can imagine for 2 to 4 is 2 to 4 gluons. Now, to do this, probably you have to optimize the algorithm so you can get an answer within a reasonable time per phase space point. So this is the next point you want to reach. And after that, you are pretty sure that you can start doing real processes. And you can cherry pick many processes then, because there are, for instance, for Hadron colliders, W plus 3 jets, TT bar plus 2 jets. You can go on and on. And for linear colliders, I'm sure there are many a final state you can also, which are of interest. And then, of course, there's always the algorithm, or the formalism is certainly applicable for more than 6 jets. So once this all works fine, you can start thinking about going to more than 6 external lines. Now, if you're going to do a calculation, the first step is to reduce your Feynman diagrams to scalar integrals. So in our 4 photon example, this is pretty easy. The 4 photon virtual amplitude is just composed of 3 Feynman diagrams, so that's very easy here. The Feynman diagrams are very easy again. So now you want to evaluate this. So the first thing is to get rid of the tensor integrals. And for this, we use decomposition proposed by, or worked out by Davidichev, and we will use explicit Lisley choices. Now, the Davidichev decomposition is, what it does, it translates tensor integrals in higher dimensional scale integrals with more, and I'll show that here. You get, for instance, this is a rank 2 4-point function, you get the usual. If you do the decomposition, you get the metric tensor. And you get some all the possible combinations of the momenta, and this goes on for a while. Now the VDHF tells us exactly what these coefficients are multiplying all these different tensor structures. And for instance, the G mu is multiplied by a six-dimensional integral, and I'll explain what these numbers are here on the next page. So this is the general definition of such an integral. Well, the dimension, and then all the propagated powers are based on different, all the propagators are based on different power. But this might be in some of them familiar notation. If you go to Feynman parameters, it's clear what this is. You just get this power in the numerator of the propagators is just the power of the Feynman parameter in the numerator. And then the dimension which sits here just tunes the power of the denominator factor. Now you can apply the VDHF and choose list these, for instance, for one of the two-photon to two-photon scatterings, you get something like this. You get an usual spinning factor sitting in front. And then you get some kinematic scales, and then you get all these scalar integrals which are sitting here now. So now the trick is that we want to calculate each of these scalar integrals numerical. So what you're going to do for a program after you do the decomposition, you just have in the black box which you call with these arguments, and it will give back a number for each of these integrals. So here we convert to the well-established analytic method of recursively expressing the scalar integrals and convert it into a numerical method. So these methods, the basic idea is pretty simple. I have here my scalar integral in a certain dimension, and this represents the list of the powers of the denominators, of the propagator factors. And we express it here in a kinematic factor times, again, scalar integrals, but they are now have reduced number of the propagators and reduced dimension. And you keep doing that until you reach a set of irreducible scalar integrals. And those integrals you know analytically, and you're going to just evaluate them within the program. Now, recursion relations between scalar integrals have been known for a very long time. I don't know whether it goes further back than this, but most people refer to this paper here as the first reference to this. And the one which is more important is for how this all developed is the paper of Van Heerden and Van Maarsen, where they expressed the pentagon in four dimensions as a sum over four-dimensional boxes times a kinematic factor. And this, of course, if you think about dimensions, it's understandable, but because this basically depends on five momenta. Five momenta in a four-dimensional space have a relation which induces this reduction. Now, the extension to arbitrary dimensions was first formalized by Bern, Dixon, and Kossauer. This was in the days when people tried to calculate z to 40ths at lab. Now, if you do this, you get almost the same formula. We have here the extra dimension, but you get here an extra piece, which is the six-dimensional five-point function. And this six-dimensional five-point function is finite. It's multiplied by epsilon, so for a next leading order calculation, you can just drop this term. So the generalization of next leading order for the Van Maarsen Van Heerden formula is just exactly the same, but you change the dimensions to 4 minus 2 epsilon. And this basic method has been further formalized by many groups. And I listed here a whole list of people who worked on that. Now, the idea behind these recursion relations is just the integration by part identity for one loop, you need only one integration by part identity. So we have here just the denominators, and you have here the and the numerator you put in the loop momentum with some arbitrary coefficients. And if you work this out, this immediately leads you to a basic equation. This S is a matrix of the kinematical, basically your external kinematics. You get these arbitrary coefficients. You have here your scalar integral, and that's expressed into lower point scalar integrals. So now, if you can invert this kinematic matrix, this is very easy to solve. And this, of course, this kinematic matrix can be inverted for n smaller or equal to 6. So then you just take the inverse, the kinematic matrix of this, and you can solve this, and you get now an identity, a recursion identity which relates the scalar integral to a simpler scalar integral, and all these arbitrary coefficients we had are now just the inverse of the kinematic matrix. Now, for more than 6, the kinematic matrix cannot be inverted, and the recursion relations change in character. Basically, what you have to do to solve, to get useful recursion relations, is here, this matrix now is singular. So you have to look at vectors in the kernel of the matrix and in the range of the matrix and choose appropriate vectors B, such that you get useful relations. This can be done. And you can extend these methods beyond 6. Now, I didn't show these recursion relations because it would be notationally too complicated, but I give you, for instance, an example. Here you have a scalar integral which you would get out of the Davidichev decomposition in dimension 8, some powers of the propagators, and this immediately reduces into an this is again the kinematic matrix. You know, you invert it numerically, and you will get again a scalar integral in 8 dimensions, and then a 4-dimensional integral and some triangles. Now these triangles and this 6-dimensional box, you know, analytical. So these are basically the endpoints of your recursion. So you would just fill in the computer program, will just fill in the formulas. Now you're left with this function. So this function, you go again, call the same routine, which will reduce this further to basic functions. So you keep doing that until everything is resolved. So after applying this recursion relation to all the integrals, you arrive at the base set of integrals. There are 3 types of base integrals. First, we have the 6-dimensional 5-point function. This, for any physical cross-section, is 0. And this was argued first by Byrne, Dixon, and Kosso, and further evaluated by Bino, Julia, and Heinrich. So this is as far as the numerical program is concerned, this is a very good property, because now within the program we can always check whether this is true. If somehow it fails, we know that we made a mistake, or the algorithm is somehow corrupted. And also you can use it as to see whether there are any numerical instability issues, because we know it's 0 and we can see how close we get to 0. Secondly, there's a 6-dimensional 4-point function. This is a pretty simple expression for the massless case, for instance, here. If we have more external masses, it gets a bit more complicated. And finally, you're left with triangles. The triangles contain all the divergent potential divergences, which are the infrared and ultraviolet divergences. So any triangle you split up, a divergent part and a finite part, this split up is arbitrary, but you have to choose in certain ways which are convenient. So now, where are we? So for any process or Feynman diagram, I can now numerically reduce to the basis set of integrals which I can evaluate. So for instance, my two-photon case, I showed you earlier the formula you get out of the Davidichev of decomposition. And now for each of these integrals is further reduced, in this case for a four-point function, to the six-dimensional four-point function times a coefficient you calculate numerically, and you get a whole bunch of three-point functions. And here I keep only the finite part. So this would give you a finite answer. You separate out the divergent triangles, and those you want to evaluate analytical. So the first divergence you can have are the ultraviolet divergences. These are very easy to treat. The most complicated one you can get, for instance, the rank 4 box, which contains an ultraviolet divergence. If you use the Davidichev decomposition, you immediately find that one of the terms, there are many terms, the divergence is contained in only one of the terms, and it's a term with two metric tensors. And here you have the coefficient function, which is now ultraviolet divergent. You can immediately express this in an analytic expression by using a recursion relation again. So you get that this eight-dimensional box becomes the finite six-dimensional box plus a whole bunch of ultraviolet triangles for which you know the analytic answer. So all the ultraviolets are very easily treated. Now the remaining divergences are a bit more complicated. These are the infrared divergences. Now often you know actually what these divergences are without they're already known. For instance, if you take an ordered amplitude, an ordered six-gluon amplitude, you get here the sum of the ordered glue-glue invariants times Born plus some finite number, plus some finite cross-section, plus the finite virtual. And this is only valid up to order 1 over n squared. So given here, given the appropriate separation between the infrared, between the finite and divergent part of the infrared triangles, and in the choice we made, this is the factorization you're actually going to get. So the numerical part of the program will calculate this function. These ones you have to combine with the phase space to get and combine in a Monte Carlo program. However, you might want to calculate the divergent part, the infrared divergent part analytical, for instance, the color. You might want to, you can probably figure out what the, if you think about it, probably you can figure out what the divergent structure is here, but it might be easier just to have an algebraic manipulation program like Forum do that for you. And this is actually pretty easy. And there was a paper of Dietmeier in the summer, and we generalized a bit to be adapted to our method. And with these methods, you can actually do what I would call a singular decomposition. So instead of using the Davidichev decomposition with all these complicated scale integrals, you can derive a more simpler decomposition for any rank n. A rank m endpoint function, you get a simpler simpler tensor which you can times the infrared the divergent part of the 3-point function. So you immediately decompose any endpoint function to a set of divergent 3-point functions. And then your form program can take that and calculate the infrared divergent part. So generically, what do you do? What do you get here? First, you have some next leading order matrix element. This will be split up into a divergent virtual part multiplying Born plus some finite part. Finite part for the to the numerical algorithm will decompose this into a 5-point, 4-point, and a set of finite parts of the 3-point function. This coefficient is always zero, so we don't worry about that. These you know analytical, and you also know these parts analytical. So the infrared divergent part of the triangle, you can use a singular decomposition to evaluate that. So we are in the middle of implementing an algorithm for calculating for the moment up to it's 2 to 4 or 1 to 5 processes within the standard model. We finished the first validation of the recursion algorithm, that's 2 photon to 2 photon, and now we're working on the second part, the second step, which is photon photon to 4 photons. And after that, the final step for algorithmic optimizations, basically speed, how fast can you do all of this. You want to calculate a more complicated process like glue to 4 gluons. So after this validation, optimization of the algorithm is done, we can start working on specific Monte Carlo programs for WEN2, LHC, linear collider. And as I explained before, the calculation of a one-loop diagram within this scheme is straightforward. You apply the VDTF decomposition to the Feynman diagrams. This gives you a Lorentz structure for each scalar integral you end up with. And then these scalar integrals are evaluated numerically. So in a way, if you think about this, normally what you would do here is use a Passerine-Feldmann decomposition. And then you have to manually do all the inversions to calculate the coefficients multiplying the tensor structures. Here you use the VDTF decomposition and I have the coefficients multiplying the tensor structures are now evaluated purely numerical. You don't have to do this this complicated step of inverting the relations you have. Now, then the final part you have to do is calculate the divergent part of virtual and combine it with the soft wheel emissions, and you can use your favorite scheme for subtracting the soft from the hard phase space and construct the Monte Carlo program. And finally, this is sort of if you can always think about how to go beyond this. And of course, the first thing is to go beyond 6 external particles. You think here more like what I talked about before, up to 6, you can think of doing a 1PC. If you go beyond 6, you certainly will need some cluster of PCs. Of course, if you go to very high dimensions, you need more than a cluster. And if you ever want to go to 2-loop, where in principle you also have all these relations and master integrals, you certainly have to go to grid computing to get anything out of such an effort. Okay, thank you.
Thank you for the very colorful talk. Any questions?
What about particle masses? Where is the main complication if you switch on all the particle masses? I assume everything up to now is massless, isn't it?
No.
No?
What's the complication of masses?
Yeah, internal masses.
Oh, well, there are the usual problems with internal masses which you cannot solve. This does not address this.
Yeah, but the point is really, if you really have the fully massive case, where do you expect the main problems? And do you think everything goes through smoothly, or will they algebraically explode in the length of expressions, or what will happen?
Well, we have, as you can see, we take little steps here. Certainly the scale integrals will produce a number now. What you put in is your responsibility what the number means, right? That's one thing. I mean, it evaluates these, but then also how to do the reduction from the diagrams for the scalars. You have to do that very carefully. And of course, there are many techniques in the literature to try this. So first we do photon, photon to 4 photons. There's just 60 diagrams. I can just use list these, and that's it. Okay. Now to go, for instance, to the glue to 4 gluons, that's the most complicated thing I can think of. To do that, you have to do very small steps. For instance, I can change the photons one by one to gluons and try to get still compact expressions and see how that works. But basically this, now you have reduced it to almost a tree-level type of problem where you have to reduce basically these coefficients multiplying the scalars. And you, there are a lot of techniques you can think of applying there. So, but I cannot answer it for now. That's the next step.
Question about the numerical stability. If I understand it correctly, then as far as the scalar integrals are concerned, it's actually pretty much equivalent to what you were doing with John Campbell, right? And so the question is, how high in dimension do you have to go in order to keep only one sort of singular coefficient in the denominator? You want to avoid accumulation of what are effectively in some other language ground determinants, right? So the question is, how high in dimension does your basis of scalar integrals have to go in order to do that?
It was a test to you, I think.
No, but I think that's why we'll see when he does the six-point functions, right? We'll actually be able to test that.
I mean, I basically the same comment. I mean, in your example, actually, uh-huh. you have written down at some point an eight-dimensional box, which you need if you calculate the derivative decomposition,
right.
the four photon. Now you want to go back to six-dimensional boxes. In your formula, you did not show it, but this actually introduces an inverse ground determinant. Now, if you do now a six-point problem, actually, you have to go to quite high-dimensional scalar integrals. And if you go backwards with your scalar reduction formulas, you just introduce your inverse ground determinants. This is what you wanted to avoid. So, why do you want actually to go back from the eight-dimensional box to the six-dimensional? You don't have to do it. I think the stability would be improved if you would not do
it. This is something... Well, you can talk about these things. We are working on the 2-4, so we will, if there are problems, we certainly encounter it, and we'll have to handle it.
And in any event, by then it'll all be solved in twister space anyway, so it's all somehow irrelevant. Okay, no more? Well, let's draw this session to a close. Thank all the speakers. And we'll start back again at 2:00.